Welcome, dear listener, to the next episode of Geopolitiek Nu, or Geopolitics Now today, since we're having a podcast in English. Welcome to the new season of our podcast recordings. We have a very special guest, Her Excellency, the Ambassador of Mexico, Carmen de la Soledad Moreno Toscano. Of course, I will give you the opportunity to introduce yourself. Please feel welcome. We're really happy to have you here today. And I'm not only here today with you, but also with my good friend and podcast partner, Rajiv Lakshmi Prasad, and with Fabiola Jimenez. Also very welcome here. We will discuss today the geopolitics of Mexico. And I think you are the go-to person in the Netherlands right now, dear ambassador, to discuss these topics with, since you have been in diplomacy for many decades. Could you briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
I am Carmen Moreno Toscano. I am the ambassador of Mexico to the Netherlands, and I am very glad to be in this country, which I have tried to start knowing, and I am very honored to be in this podcast.
My name is Fabiola Jimenez. I am a Mexican diplomat working at the Embassy of Mexico in the Netherlands for over 3 years, and I am responsible for the cultural section and the section of what we call international cooperation.
Can you tell a bit more about the relationship of Mexico and China right now? Because, of course, there's a rivalry coming up between the US and China. Mexico wants to be friends with everyone and has good access towards Asia, including China. Can you speak a bit more about that? Is the relationship between Mexico and China going right now?
Yes, they are going very well. We have good trade relations with China, and they are also... There are some investments of China in Mexico, like they are building cars, electric cars in Mexico. So we consider that they are very good trade partners.
Okay, so good trade partners. Is it also sometimes up to Mexico to mediate a bit between the US and China to bring both parties together, or is that not up to Mexico to mingle in those affairs?
No, we don't mingle in anybody's affairs.
So very... Mexico really respects sovereignty of other countries and to sort out their own interests and internal affairs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we have an article in the Constitution which establishes the principles of the foreign policy of Mexico. And one of the principles is the non-intervention in the internal affairs of others in the Constitution. Article 89.
Okay. Wow. I think that has a big influence, of course, also on the geopolitical behavior of Mexico. It makes it very clear that Mexico doesn't interfere. But relationships are very important, not only with the US and China, but also with neighbors closer to home, I would say. Okay, not closer than the US, but more south from Mexico. Middle America and South America and the Caribbean, including the Caribbean. Can you tell more about how the relationship between Mexico on the one hand and Latin America and the Caribbean on the other hand has evolved over the last few decades? Has it become more close? Are there some countries that have closer relationship with Mexico? We would like to know that.
Mexico has very good relations with Latin America. We also have some challenges, like, for instance, with the Central American countries. The main challenge is migration. But we have established some cooperation programs by which we try to help people that want to migrate, not to migrate, to stay in their own countries. So we have two programs that the president has very much promoted. One is Sembrando Vida, and that consists on paying people to grow their crops in their lands and to stay there. And we have used a lot of resources for that. So we have used $30 million for Guatemala and $30 million for Honduras also, so the people there can stay in their own countries. The way it works is that the people get monthly payment directly to their own accounts, not through the government, but to their
basic
own.
Basic income, yeah.
Like basic income. And so they have to stay growing their crops and growing trees. mainly.
Is migration also a problem for Mexico? Because we know, of course, from the European perspective, we view migration from Africa and the Middle East as problematic, especially the quantities are considered to be too high. In America, we can see the same right now. What is the Mexican standing right now? Does it want to stem the flows of migration for the US or also in its own interest because the burden of migration towards Mexico is too high?
From the Middle America?
From Middle America to Mexico, yeah.
We are not the destination country. We are just a transit country for most Latin Americans. Very few want to stay in Mexico. Although some stay and we do provide asylum for the, it's not asylum, it's refuge for the ones who want to stay. But everybody wants to go to the U.S. Nobody wants to stay in Mexico. In that sense, it's different from Europe. The people that come here want to stay in Europe. The people that go to Mexico do not want to stay in Mexico.
So that is giving many challenges to Mexico right now. Would Mexico to have lower migration numbers coming into the country?
We would like, but we consider that we cannot do anything except try to help how people to stay in their own countries. That means helping them solve the causes of migration. But we cannot do anything with the Africans or Indians or... They simply come to Mexico by very many different routes, and they want to go to the U.S.
But most important in the policy of Mexico is to address the causes of migration. And Mexico is doing that with financing farmers and granting them a basic income. Fabiola, you would like to add something here?
I think also Mexico has brought this topic to the multilateral fora. For instance, the last time that Mexico was a member of the Security Council of the UN in 2021-2022, it was one of the topics that we championed and we pursue to put it in the agenda with the goal of emphasizing that all these discussions related to migration have to be taken from the perspective of human rights, never to forget that human rights have to always be taken care of, and also what Ambassador Moreno mentioned, to have in consideration the fact that most of these people are not choosing to migrate. They are somehow forced to do it. So we need to help them solve the root causes so they can stay if they want to. So that's, I think, the two main aspects that Mexico has brought to multilateral for as well.
And sometimes if another country does not want to cooperate with Mexico or doesn't want to go as far as Mexico would like to see, how do you cope with that? I can imagine it's really difficult to act in such a situation. For example, now with Guatemala, imagine a situation in which Mexico says we are facing a lot of migration from Guatemala. We would like to address the root causes in that country. We want to honor human rights, but we're also faced with the consequences, the challenges being a transit country. And then it might be hard to come up with a voluntarily collaboration with Guatemala. How does Mexico act in these situations?
Fortunately for us, now Guatemala has a very good government. Before it was much, much more difficult. But now the government of Guatemala is also committed to human rights. And therefore, not so many people migrate because some people migrated because of being politically persecuted. But now that element is no longer existent. Now it's only economic causes. So we have been cooperating with Guatemala a lot. The president launched a high-level meeting in Palenque with other presidents of the region, in which he invited the presidents of the countries that had more migrants and in which they committed to try to help with the causes of migration so that the migration would be less. So we do have some diplomatic initiatives in order to have less migrants.
Okay, so in that sense is unique and a little bit of maneuver of Mexico in that sense. Maybe also because of the popular population sentiments in Latin America itself. Then, of course, there We have discussed some Middle American countries and also Latin American countries, briefly Brazil, Venezuela, Guatemala. But there's also a part in Latin America that is being overlooked a lot, the Caribbean. Oh. Can you speak a bit about the relations between Mexico and the Caribbean? And part of the Caribbean is, of course, Suriname, mm-hmm. Where you have an heritage, of course, yes. Rajiv. Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, etc. How are these relations there, Ambassador?
We have very good relations with the Caribbean. And we have very good relations with all the countries there. And also with Curaçao, which is part of the Netherlands. And with Jamaica or Trinidad or all the Caribbean countries. We participate with CARICOM in several meetings. We have a meeting of high level with CARICOM heads of state or government.
So the relationships are good there. We're
yes.
even Mexico and the Netherlands, you could argue, we're actually neighbors,
yeah.
Being
yeah.
Curaçao quite closely to Mexico. What are the challenges there? And what are the most important priorities for Mexico's in these relationships?
The challenges for the Caribbean are also drug trafficking, mainly. And I think that they want to eliminate the drug trafficking in the Caribbean. That, I would say, it's the main challenge.
And is Mexico helping in that?
We are trying to eliminate the drug trafficking also. And the routes by which the drug traffickers go, as far as we can, we have been stopping that. So,
In a previous podcast with our Latin America expert, Jelle van der Wal, we have discussed the issue of cartels and drug trafficking in Latin America. We think it's a major problem, a major threat also to the governments, to the population, and it's really limiting the growth of the people and the development of these countries. Can you speak more about the importance and the threat of these cartels for Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America? How should we as Europeans view the role of these cartels?
I think that Europeans should cooperate more with the governments in order to strengthen them, to give them some training, to give them some, for instance, the Netherlands, Rotterdam is one of the places where more drugs come in. So we can have more exchange of information and cooperation with the Netherlands. And that is very helpful.
Okay. And could you also speak a bit more about the influence the cartels have on Latin American countries? How do they...
I'm not so well informed about all the way in which the cartels operate in Latin America. The only thing is that some drugs are produced not in Mexico, but in some countries in Latin America. And then they try to go to the U.S. through Mexico also. And that would be, let's say, one of the activities of the cartels. But we are fighting that through establishing more controls in the ports.
I think that's the difficulty of Mexico. It's literally a transit country. You said for the drugs cartel, but also for the migration from Central
yeah.
America. So it's really a transit country. And it also brings a lot of problems for the people living in Mexico, I can imagine. And if you go further to Latin America, we were talking about Europe, the European Union. And many people, also many students of us, were thinking, okay, Latin America, they have, as we see it from the outside, almost same-ish culture, Roman Catholic, they speak Spanish, Portuguese, maybe geographical, they are on the same side. But still, it seems to be difficult for those countries to really integrate like maybe a European Union or maybe even an African Union. What are the root causes of difficult integration of Latin America?
We in Latin America have not yet arrived to a position in which we can integrate all of us. We cooperate a lot, but we cannot integrate in this moment. We are very different, have very different problems, different levels of development, different challenges. It's different types of governments. So it's quite complicated. And in the economic area, some countries are competitors with the others. So integration is not so easy.
Okay, sometimes there's internal competition within Latin American countries that really makes integration more difficult. That I can understand. Can you talk more about some competition between countries? Is that an economically? Do they have different geopolitical views, different political views, the one being more right-wing, the other one being more left-wing?
No, for instance, let's take the bananas. That's an example. Some countries produce bananas, and then they are competing for the markets. That would be one problem. Political right and left, I really don't like the way you describe, because no country is in one side or the other. They are quite mixed, no?
Of course. Yeah.
They have right and left elements in their own governments. So I don't think it's a problem of right and left. It's more a problem of the economic situation and the political. We don't have a common enemy that would make us integrate more. We just share and cooperate. We have the very good example of cooperation, which is the CELAC, which we established. It was mainly a Mexican initiative, and we wanted to cooperate with all Latin America. The day that the program of CELAC was authorized and approved, it was when the president, the current president, took office, and it was during that, let's say, reception or for the delegates of the Latin America, for the ministers for foreign affairs. And the president had a conversation with each one, but then they met and they approved the program. And the first issue in that program is health. They decided to cooperate in the area of health. And just imagine, this was in December, and in February, who came? COVID.
Oh yeah, COVID. Yes, of course.
It was very interesting the way that CELAC confronted that challenge. They met the ministers for foreign affairs, met every month virtually, and they cooperated to share information, to share some products, to share even vaccines. Mexico started making vaccines, and Mexico sent the vaccines to other countries in Latin America and the Caribbean also. It was a very interesting experience, although COVID is still all around everywhere, but we were able to cooperate very well with the other Latin Americans. And then we were able to transit to other areas of cooperation.
And I think this is also the pace of Latin America. As what you said, is they have a sector like health, and they have very good results. And that gives more space for other sectors like space, maybe security, infrastructure. But I think that's the difference with the European Union. And the European Union is much more supranational. There's a higher government which can force a higher speed, to say it like that. I think in Latin America is much more governmental. So like the governments come together and we'll just try it with sector, with sector, with sector. And if we have good results, then we'll go over to the next one. I think that CELAC is the right space, I think, for that.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mexico has an embassy in the Netherlands. And just a simple question. Why is it, from the Mexican perspective, important to have an embassy in the Netherlands? What's the connection between the Netherlands and Mexico? What are the aligned interests, for example?
The connection is very historical. Mexico and the Netherlands have a very important historical relations. It's mainly trade since the 16th century. Mexico was not even independent we had very strong relations with the Netherlands.
Here is important for Mexico back then, it was really important to have the recognition of European states, because obviously Spain at the time was not yet ready to acknowledge independence. It was important to have, the Netherlands was the first European country that recognized Mexico as independent. That was very important. That treaty was very important for us for that reason. But also, as I have read from books from Dutch authors, it was also important for the Netherlands because they wanted an economic partner in the Americas besides the U.S. That treaty was mutually beneficial and significant for these two different reasons. It was the beginning of the bilateral relationship that we still have.
If you look at the relationship nowadays and also in the future, where can we collaborate more? And where is the collaboration going really well between Mexico and the Netherlands?
We have good trade relations and we have good cooperation relations. We have very many Mexican students coming here, that in the academic area. We have very good relations in the academy. But if we go to the possible areas of cooperation, I would say that water management would be one of the first ones, of the most important areas of cooperation between Mexico and the Netherlands.
Even now the climate change is coming also in Mexico.
And droughts? Are you referring to droughts, maybe?
Yeah, and to managing water, to cleaning water. There are very many. Now, cooperation also goes with the private sector, no? The private sector has investments in Mexico. We are benefiting from advances in technology that the Netherlands has. For instance, in the area of crops, we have some greenhouses that are established by the Netherlands in Mexico. And now the Netherlands is the second world exporter of food. But now we are the seventh exporter of food.
If I may, I think we are not aware that we are complementary, Mexico and the Netherlands. And the water field that Ambassador Moreno was referring before is an example. We are working, it was recently established, the Binational Water Council, Mexico, the Netherlands. Because, for instance, we can learn a lot from the Netherlands about the water management, but the Netherlands can also learn, for instance, about drought, which is a phenomenon that is increasingly becoming common here, but it's new still. And in Mexico, we have a wild experience about management of droughts. That's why this initiative was created just this year. It's a technical, scientific group of experts from both countries that will provide advice on what projects to include in the bilateral agenda related to water. And it's an exercise that, if it's successful, we hope to replicate in other fields of cooperation.
Oh, indeed, the Netherlands and Mexico have complementary agendas and interests, for example, in the field of water. Managing droughts is an experience that Mexico has. Cleaning water, for example, is an asset that the Netherlands has, so we can collaborate more. And if successful, then there can also be a spillover to other fields. I have one friend with whom I started a company that's called Flexilizer, with Manuel Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
And he's from Mexico indeed, and he has a PhD, a very smart guy. And indeed, there's quite a big Mexican diaspora in the Netherlands that I was not aware of so much. Of course, you cannot be aware of everything. So indeed, I hope that these diaspora forces some awareness, or creates some awareness, let me put it like that, between the complementarity of Mexico and the Netherlands. I think that really can bring the relationship forward. There's one more relationship, and that's the one of Mexico and the European Union. Because, of course, the Netherlands is part of the European Union. We are one of the founding members. The European Union is very important to us. And I would say that we are also important to the EU. How does Mexico view its relationship with the European Union?
We have a very good cooperation with the European Union, and we are trying to modernize the bilateral trade agreement that we have. We have an agreement that works very well, but we want to modernize it because it's somehow old, and we want to to put it up to date. And we have very good prospects of cooperation for the future. We have been cooperating very much in different areas.
I don't know if there is awareness about the fact that Mexico was the first country with whom the European Union as a whole signed a treaty that includes commercial, political consultation. It started operating in 2000. So this is another example of why Mexico has always been seen as relevant, and it still is. And
it also has human rights.
And human rights, yes. And I just think another area where we are complementary and that is important for Mexico, for the Netherlands, and for the European Union is trade. They're an expert in trade, but I do know that we have a very wide, Mexico has a very wide network of trade treaties that allowed with Asian countries, European countries, and countries in the Americas, that is an asset for Mexico to be seen as a partner, because we sometimes work as a link between, for instance, the European Union and the U.S. The European Union has not a treaty, commercial treaty with the U.S., but it does have a treaty with us. Yeah. So that is an opportunity for them to bring products to Mexico, and then the products are produced in Mexico and enter the U.S. with preferential tariffs. So we are important for that reason as well, for the European Union as a whole.
Mexico, of course, is economically growing a lot the last few years. It's one of the new emerging markets that's getting a lot of attention. And I also see that the trade between the European Union, the Netherlands on the one hand, and Mexico on the other hand, is growing a lot. Could you speak more about this?
I would like to mention that Mexico is a very good place to invest, that the Netherlands are investing in Mexico and also the European Union. We produce some cars and other materials that we export to the U.S. with a free trade agreement that we have with the U.S. And so it's a good opportunity for both the Netherlands and the European Union. Therefore, we are a very good investment place for this, what is called the nearshoring.
For nearshoring, indeed. And I've also read that Mexico has a very well-educated population that is generally quite bilingual, both Spanish and English speaking, although the latter could sometimes be a bit better English. But is it hard for Mexico to sometimes generate jobs for the higher educated in its population?
It depends. I think that in science, for instance, you benefit very much of our scientific experts, because they come here, they get the PhD, they start working in research, and then they stay. Now we have about 11,000 people from Mexico living in the Netherlands, which is a lot. But we have people here that have won prizes, national prizes, in the Netherlands. So they are very good, very good, very competitive people. I would say that we would benefit very much for having them in Mexico, but that they have chosen to stay in the Netherlands.
Okay, so there's a lot of untapped human capital in Mexico that should shape a fertile ground for investments from the Netherlands.
And there's also a history of a lot of investment, Dutch investment also in Mexico. So yes. It's not a new thing. There are a lot of experiences, even proven experiences of European and Dutch investment in Mexico that are growing well, especially as Mexico can be a port of the rest of North America and maybe Latin America.
Yeah,
and it's something mutual, because you have both Dutch companies in Mexico, but also you have Mexican companies in here. Just to provide you a brief example of Mexican companies, we have here all the Starbucks, for instance, that you find in Spain and the Netherlands and the Benelux are actually owned by a Mexican company that has also the controls of Starbucks also in Mexico and Latin America. It's called Alsea. So they have a huge investment here. And there are others, companies that exist. For Wabin Orbia, that is also Mexican, both Dutch company, and they produce pipes. And they are now located here and producing here. So it's mutual. We obviously have important Dutch companies like Heineken, for instance, or Damen that had a lot of investment in Mexico, but it also happens the other way.
Especially once again, Heineken is important, of course.
We are a while ago, they bought Mexican beers, many of them. But the thing is that it's complementary, once again, the relationship. And I think the trade balance is quite balanced always, year after year. So mutually beneficial.
Which is beneficial, but still some untapped potential that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
One last question, and in this regard, there are 11,000 Mexicans in the Netherlands right now. Is there some message that you would like to share with them?
That I hope they are very happy. That the importance of their contribution to the Netherlands is very important for Mexico also. So that I hope that they can continue with their own careers and benefiting both the Netherlands and Mexico.
Thank you very much, both of you, of course, for coming to the podcast. We have discussed the geopolitical view of Mexico, in which it says that it does not interfere in other countries, which is a constitutional clause, but it does try to pursue human rights elsewhere in the world. Migration is a very important topic right now for Mexico, being a transit country from Latin America or Middle America towards the United States of America. Unfortunately, Mexico is not only a transit country for people and migration, but also for drugs, which is another threat that Latin America is being addressed with. More collaboration with the Netherlands and the European Union would be beneficial for both parties, for example, to counter imports of cocaine in the Rotterdam port. Mexico generally tries to foster good relationship with all parties in the world and does not interfere, and thinks that more collaboration in Latin America is possible, but closer integration as the European Union in the foreseeable future is not possible. Also because there's not a common enemy, which is a positive thing in that sense. And then when it comes to the bilateral collaboration with the Netherlands and the European Union, more awareness about the complementarity could benefit both parties right now. And I would like to argue here, Rajiv, that there's a task for us, for Geopolitiek Nu, to create more awareness about Mexico as a geopolitical player, but also for the relationship between both countries. If you have any questions about the Netherlands, either for governance, economics, or business opportunities, let us know. We would like to establish closer relationship between both countries as well. Also for geopolitical analysts elsewhere in the world, reach out to us through LinkedIn. Again, thank you very much for coming, and we hope to see you in the future again.